doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming.
And welcome to Eurobytes. The last time we met, the world looked different. Now Trump won in a landslide. The Senate is Republican. The House is still being counted, as far as I'm concerned. And look what happened. The German government collapsed only a few hours later. Wednesday, November 6th, was probably one of the most historic days in recent history. And today we're going to discuss a lot of topics from Germany to UK, the US and back. But let's start out with
Before we get going, I have something. I just want to play this real quick.
Alleluia, alleluia.
Sorry about that, but I just wanted to play the Alleluia chorus.
Hallelujah, and indeed.
Absolutely. Well, the angel chorus was singing, and so What happened on Wednesday, November 6th? Well, we woke up here in Germany to Trump's victory. The media, of course, being stunned as usual, with that I mean the mainstream media, because they, of course, predicted a Kamala victory. And the German government, meanwhile, had already been in coalition trouble. This goes back a few weeks now over a budget crisis, but this traffic light coalition as a whole has basically been a coalition doomed from the get-go. It's been a coalition that really hasn't found any unity, and quite frankly, its ideas haven't worked. So what are the details and what really happened? Just a quick, spotlight of this whole story. The coalition wanted to go into debt for certain projects. And one of these projects, of course, was to fund Ukraine. This would be around 3 billion euros. They wanted to make a certain volume of debt. I think this would have been around 15 billion euros. And Ukraine would have been used as the forefront to make debt on a total. Now, what we have to remember, the German government back under Merkel, this dates back to the Euro crisis with Greece. It is constitutionally mandated that you are not allowed to make debt, because the German government back then, the German voters said, we do not want to be drowned in debt, which is a fiscally smart thing to do. The Germans tend to be fiscally very conservative, and they saw what happened to all those countries around them, Greece, Portugal, Italy, Spain, Ireland, and of course, Greece. So the main idea back then in the Constitution was to basically ban this money printing and debt machine that, you know, we saw all around us. So now we, of course, have a government in place that, as Margaret Thatcher once said, socialism works until you run out of other people's money. And the German government that we have now likes to spend money. Why? Because they have all these pet peeve social projects that they want to finance, including migrants and the so-called Bürgergeld, citizens' money. You know, you come into our country, you don't have a job. Well, here, you have five kids. We pay for everything. This is a very expensive thing to do. And as we all know, it doesn't work. Money doesn't grow on the tree. So the German finance minister, Christian Lindner, who is part of the Freedom Democrat, FDP, Freedom Liberal Democrat Party of Germany, basically said he cannot approve this budget because it breaks his constitutional oath. The chancellor called him in a crisis meeting saying, look, we got to find a deal. We got to find a way to pass this budget, to pass all these laws, because we are in big, deep doo-doo. Come Wednesday, the two meet again in the federal chancellery. And Lindner, of course, said, I cannot break my constitutional oath. You're going to have to fire me, or we have snap elections. And what did Olaf Scholz, the chancellor, do? He fired him. And he, of course, does not want snap elections. Why? Well, look at the polls. He would be annihilated. So now we are in this dilemma where we have a minority government. Olaf Scholz is still the chancellor. The Greens and the Social Democrats are the only party that is left in power. They have no majority in the German parliament, in the Bundestag. And they now are trying to postpone the German federal parliamentary elections to perhaps something like March. What the chancellor, the German constitution demands is that the chancellor vouches for a vote of no confidence. This would then, of course, give the German president the power to relieve the parliament from its duties, meaning there would have to be snap elections. If he were to do this upcoming week, we would have snap elections on Sunday, January 19th, which is very interesting. Why? Because on January 20th, the Saint Fabian patron day, just to let you know, gentlemen, my patron saint day is on the day when Donald Trump is sworn into office on January 20th. But that's just a side point. Look, the point is we would have snap elections, and so a new German government would be voted into office by the time a new president and a new administration is sworn in into the U.S. Now, I don't want to go into a metaphysical realm here, but I do find it quite interesting that the decision that was made in the U.S. had major influence on the way that Germany behaved. Now, many of the more critical parties that, center parties would label as anti-American, I would just label them as anti-establishment, meaning the AfD and the Bündnissache Wagenknecht, they continually stated, we are in a federal crisis, and the only thing our news cover is the U.S. election. This is insane. So the claim is often made that Germany is sort of a vassal state of the U.S. And I think with a Trump administration, which will come into power, I think a Trump administration wants this to end and wants this vassal state status in that sense to end. And I think it's time for the German people to pull themselves up on their own bootstraps and start growing up and start taking over responsibility. But that's only going to be possible with a new government. So where are we left? We are left with political shambles, but we're left with a lot of opportunity, and we're left with a lot of possibility for, in my opinion, change that has to be necessary for the continent to function. Now, the big question with this upcoming snap election, if you look at the polls, the only party that's really winning right now is the AfD. The AfD is now polling at 19%, so they're inching close to 20. But Todd, as we talked last time about the AfD, make no mistake, they are not in their strategy gearing up to form a government, because it's not going to be possible. However, 2029 is their big focus. But what they can do at this point now is they can wreak a lot of havoc when they're a party of around 20%. That's a major factor in the parliament, and they will be the main opposition party, because I believe that the CDU in the end will win this election, and it just depends on who they're going to govern with. But these are major changes that are happening in Germany, and it's stunning and it's fascinating to see that, you know, with Biden, this the traffic light coalition came in, and with Biden Harris, now Harris losing, the traffic light coalition is out. So this is fascinating.
Let me ask you a question about that. I have a colleague who has a Jewish daughter, and she was quite upset by what, and she lives in Germany, and she was quite upset by what happened in Amsterdam. And I said, well, then why aren't you supporting AfD in Germany then? And that just, it was outside the matrix. They couldn't comprehend that.
Right.
Why is that in Germany that people cannot see that? Or some people cannot see that? That if you want security and safety, that you don't support these parties that are bringing in criminals into your country. What's so hard about that in Germany?
Well, and not only that, think about that. They're on one way or another, the European Union is funding Hamas.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, through the UN or any other channeled way, and even that, the German Department of Foreign Relations is basically still vouching or working to import migrants and refugees from Afghanistan. And look, I mean, Karl Lagerfeld, one of the esteemed fashion guys, once said, "I hate Merkel because she imported all these anti-Semites." Yeah, I mean, look, Todd, I think the only answer that I have to that, and I'd like to hear Christian's opinion on that too, but the only answer that I have is that Germany has been stained through its history, that whenever you have a party that is right wing and that says Germany first, there's a fear of anti-Semitism. Is the AfD anti-Semitic? Well, there's even a fraction. I'll put it to you this way. The AfD has its own group called Jews in the AfD. The AfD, of course, is anti-immigration. And it's anti, well, I wouldn't say it's anti-Islam, but it's anti-Islamization. Yeah. It basically fights anti-Semitism, and I don't know if it fights anti-Semitism directly, but at least it says what we need to do is we need to throw out anti-Semites of our country. Are there anti-Semites in the AfD? Is that still a thing in the far right as itself? Well, what I do know and what I can tell you is there's certainly a debate among the AfD leadership of how to remember the Holocaust. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is something about that they say we have to. They criticize what they label as the guilt complex. So there's a huge Holocaust memorial in the middle of Berlin, and to some AfD members, that is more of an outrageous thing. But
when you say the AfD is anti-Semitic, but
no, I'm not saying the AfD.
Not you. I'm like a person who may be ignorant and propagandized by the media says that's they're anti-Semitic, but then they ignore all the anti-Semites being flown into the country by the carload. I don't understand it. I mean,
what exactly?
It's just like exactly. In the U.S., well, the fight for freedom is still going on with Kamala, even though she what freedom? They were the ones putting people in jail, for God's sake.
Right. I mean, this is a narrative thing. This is a narrative thing. And look, I couldn't agree more. If you look at the right in Europe, look at Geert Wilders. I mean, these are people that, you know, they're very pro-Israel. The Freedom Party in Austria is very pro-Israel. Perhaps the fact, and this is one of the claims that people will make regarding anti-Semitism, they say if you use the term globalist, you're anti-Semitic. They say if you use the term
cultural Marxist. I reject completely because we get stained with that too. A globalist has nothing to do with Judaism.
Right, right. Yeah. But you know, but that's that would be an explanation. So for example, if you say, well, George Soros, the Soros thing, remember when Viktor Orban started putting these posters up and warning of Soros? Well, they labeled that as anti-Semitic as well.
Of course.
Right?
It's like saying if you hate Jeffrey Dahmer or anti-white. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a stupid comment. I mean, but it's the narrative, as you say, and people
it's
have
the narrative. Yeah.
Brainwashed, and I completely and forcefully and vocally reject it whenever I have the opportunity.
Like I mean, I'm doing it. Yeah, I mean, it is narrative, as you say, and I mean, you guys will have seen that in the United States as well, with certain elements of society being hysterical, and you know, but the large part of the electorate didn't buy it this time around that Trump was a fascist and whatever ism you can throw at him. But I would say the one thing that is very frustrating, if I, you know, I've now lived in a couple of different countries in Europe in short succession, and probably the one that is most monolithic in its outlook is Germany. Pretty much you talk to people and pretty much everybody tells you this, and, oh, isn't it worrisome that Trump is going into power? And that obviously transfers to the whole AfD bit. And I mean, mind you, we have one thing that the United States does not have. We don't have the First Amendment. And that goes a long way. So I mean, the one thing that probably the Trump victory has ensured, but still battles are going to be fought, is Twitter and how the European Union and individual states will come after Twitter for perceived hate speech laws. And so, I mean, imagine the United States, it's bad enough. You've got a sizable segment of American society that's bought into Donald Trump as a fascist, and oh my God, we're in for dark days. But you also have the majority that don't think that way, and you do have a lot of residual freedoms that we never had. I mean, the Federal Republic of Germany from the get-go thought we had to control speech because the Nazis were going to come back. So that's that. And I mean, it is interesting for me, kind of coming full circle. I lived in the Netherlands for 4 years, and even way back, and we're talking 2006, 2010, there was always a thing between two football clubs. So there's the football club of Ajax Amsterdam that I think in its founding had Jewish members, which is why their moniker was always Joden, which means Jews. And then there's Feyenoord Rotterdam, and Feyenoord Rotterdam, the city of Rotterdam is heavily influenced by migration. And even then, the Feyenoord fans always routinely shouted sort of slurs or kind of make the hissing sound, which macabrely, well, meant to be reminiscent of gas. And so that kind of stuff has been going on for like 15, 20 years, and it's only now come out in a very obvious way with Maccabi Tel Aviv coming over. But yeah, as Fabian said, folks don't make that connection. And I mean, in Germany, you really have to break out of the mainstream bubble big time.
That is the key. Yeah. Christian, that is what I've noticed in my personal discussions here. Anytime you listen to friends who are not part of the mainstream bubble, who don't listen to the mainstream state-run media, they were incredibly pleased, as a matter of fact, that Trump won. A friend of mine said, my God, my stock market portfolio just increased by 2%. Again, a lot of, even if you read comments on YouTube, there were a lot of people in Germany that were quietly but happily said, hey, Trump won. And then you saw also, AfD, Alice Weidel, I think was the only party to officially congratulate in a positive sense with joy that Trump won, right? The AfD was the only party that wanted Trump to win. This marks a really interesting shift now, because look, what are we facing? We're facing now, again, a new administration. This Trump administration, the way we see it, I liked what Jordan Peterson did. He called Trump's team the X-Men, Trump's X-Men. And Trump formed a new coalition. And I don't think he's going to make the same mistake as he did last time with horrible personality decisions. I mean, I don't think he's going to do that again. like, I mean, John Bolton, right? So anyways, so the question that is raised then, and this is really important, when you have a Trump administration, and on the German side, you have basically a majority parliament that endorsed the other side. Well, now you have the Trump team basically only being the only ally in Germany is an opposition party. Let's be real about this. I mean, if Friedrich Merz becomes chancellor of Germany, we talked about him before. He's sort of a Mitt Romney type conservative, BlackRock attorney. He led some transatlantic organization called the Atlantic Brücke, the Atlantic Bridge. This was basically some kind of a network, or is a network organization. But he calls himself incredibly pro-American. But I've always said this. How do you find pro-American? Is pro-American pro-establishment, or is it pro, mid-America, Midwest America, American values? What is pro-American in today's world? And I think the truth is that a lot of these people are going to have to figure out and are going to have to come to terms with the fact that nation first is winning. Nation first is winning, and nation first won in the United States, and nation first, won in Italy. Nation first is winning in the Netherlands, and it's going to win in France. It's going to win in Sweden, in Poland, in Austria, and it's going to win in Germany. And either these, midline parties get on terms, or they're done with. So this is the point that we're going to face. And I'm going to be somewhat optimistic about the future, because I do see changes are happening. But I just wonder how it's all going to play out.
Let me ask you this on Germany. I'm going to share this. Big, fight between Elon Musk and Olaf Scholz.
Oh yeah.
You mentioned Twitter, the battle to come with Twitter. I could see Trump saying, "Okay, you want to shut down one of our social media companies and censor them? Then you have a 2,000% tariff on German cars, right, or something like that."
Yeah.
Will come, right?
Well, Trump's going to play hardball. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I mean, even if Rick Grenell becomes Secretary of State, I mean, Todd, how likely is that?
I don't know. There's a lot of swirling going on behind the scenes with different positions, like Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State. You know, he ousted Pompeo and Nikki Haley yesterday. Yeah. I've heard Eric Prince. I've heard Mike Rogers in State. I don't have a good insight into that. It's a black hole. You know, you can recommend and you can get information so far, and then it just, nothing comes back. So
absolutely. Okay. Well, if Rick Grenell were to become Secretary of State, that would be really interesting for Germany, because he was our ambassador, or he was here in Berlin. And he knows Germany very well. He knows the German establishment. He knows the opposition. He knows this country. He knows this continent very well. So that would be really interesting. As you mentioned, Scholz, look, the question is, how long is this government going to last? I don't think it's going to last long. I just think their time is over.
And none of the other parties would go into a coalition with AfD. Is that correct?
No, not a chance at this moment. Mm-hmm. What we will see, the AfD will enter a coalition, in my opinion, on a state level. So in Saxony, they're now discussing a possible coalition between the CDU and the AfD. That is an option, not on the federal level yet. But these snap elections, I just want to make one comment. The clown show that we're now facing here, the lady who is in charge of running the federal election said, It is not. There's so many threats and so many hurdles to overcome to do snap elections because we don't have enough paper. Are you kidding me? That is one of her claims. We don't have enough paper to print. Hey, Todd, guess what? We're not using machines. Well, that's good.
I'm okay. David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management. a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
That's good. Okay.
There is a silver lining, yes.
Right? But besides that, they're trying to do anything in their power to prevent these snap elections. And of course, the Green Party and the Social Democrats are saying, this is a threat to democracy. These are fascist methods. Look, the only threat to democracy is, we have to always say, democracy means that they are in power. Once they're not in power, then it's authoritarian, right? So,
yes.
I mean, also, there's another interesting element. And I mean, obviously, at Eurobytes, we always try to get the theory of things, dive into the theory. And obviously, the most fascinating things for us at the US election is that the last triumph of Trump in 2016 was somewhat hollow in the sense that he didn't quite understand how the machine worked, and he didn't have many of the US elites on side, other than political elites. And obviously now he does. I mean, he's got amazing people like Vivek Ramaswamy. He has a lot of the entrepreneurs, even the likes of Mark Zuckerberg and the Amazon guy Jeff Bezos, at least acquiesced. So the Washington Post was not allowed to send an endorsement, and a lot of interesting guys. Naval Ravikant is another fascinating entrepreneur with one of the least famous people, if that makes sense. So have thrown their head in the ring. Yeah, this is something I can get behind. So he's won over a sizable chunk of the new elites. Not the old defense establishment or defense industry guys, not the old media guys, but, you know, the tech entrepreneurs, which is fascinating. In Germany, obviously, the AfD is miles away from that, which is another reason why the narrative is so easily controlled. We don't have anybody like Peter Thiel who's on side. To help Trump or Naval Ravikant or Vivek Ramaswamy, who can help out with their contacts and their billions and their expertise. We don't have a counter elite yet, which is what elite theory tells you. At the end of the day, elections only matter so much. What really matters is who's in charge behind the scenes. And now we're seeing a shift of elites in the United States. In Germany, we're still miles away from that. And it'll be interesting, and probably, I mean, last time we were sort of looking into the crystal ball, how that all might work out, where, I mean, the interesting constellation in the past would have been a Harris, Biden, Obama government would have stayed in power, and the Germans and the European Union would have started messing with Twitter. And the interesting thing is, would have a Biden-Harris Obama administration actually stood up for its own company, or would they have acquiesced? I mean, in the same way that they allowed to do their dirty anti-First Amendment bidding to be done by private companies, would they have just shrugged?
Yes, now they would. They are behind the effort for the EU to come after Twitter.
So now you've got somebody who's willing to play hardball. And in some ways, the current US government is really, really interesting. So on the one hand, your former government played hardball enough to, well, in my humble opinion, and read whatever investigative journalists wrote about it, the former government was playing hardball enough to blow up our pipeline, but at the same time, not hardcore enough to blow back against us encroaching on United States First Amendment. So now we've got a government like Trump. The interesting thing about Trump that Europeans don't get, he fundamentally likes Europe. He especially, he's an Anglophile, but he also very much likes Germany. But he's going to get into our grill if he needs to, but he's also incredibly cooperative, you know, if he's cooperated with. And I mean, certainly with the whole Russia-Ukraine thing, I mean, he's like, look, guys, probably continue doing what you want, but not on our dime, and in the defense policy. So on the one hand, he's probably more European friendly than the former outgoing administration. And he's, I mean, the former outgoing administration in some ways, I think almost, and they succeeded, made Europe more dependent on the United States and almost like in some ways vassal state, certainly in the Germany sense. So on the one hand, we've got an administration that is definitely America first, but that I think is going to treat Europe much more like, look, you guys want it, you guys do it, you guys pay for it. And that's going to be really interesting how that's going to work out. Fascinating dichotomy. So on the one hand, certainly brainwashed Germans think that, oh my God, life under the new American administration is going to be a lot harder than the old one. And I'm like, well, what did the old one really do to you? I mean, look at the pipeline. Look at how you suddenly became more dependent on Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
And the current administration, I'm like, they're going to be much more challenging European decisions. They're going to be defending their companies from essentially having extraterritorial application of European anti-free speech laws on an American company. But, you know, I mean, for the rest, I think they're going to give us also far more liberty than the previous administration has.
Well, just to make my closing statements for my part here, I think the biggest German strategic mistake was not to tap into the emotional factor of Trump being of German heritage, period. There was a press conference in the White House where he is basically said that, you know, being of German blood is good stuff. And Merkel gave him a smirky look. And, you know, with Trump, I think he remembered that. And I think that's a very embarrassing attitude that people like Merkel and that whole establishment had. And I think if Germany was smart, tap into that emotional soft power, because I think Trump would really appreciate it if his German heritage was being celebrated. I mean, look, he's from the same town that the guy who invented Heinz ketchup is from. This is in the Palatine region. So anyways, closing out, it's possible, in my opinion, that snap elections might happen in January if the government breaks apart next week. That will be determined, though, how much pressure is on Scholz. But we'll be keeping our viewers up to date on that. And with that being said, gentlemen, I wish you a great day.
Great. Thanks for coming on, Fabian. And we'll have you back next time, I hope.
All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Well, that probably leaves me with one more comment about Germany, and then we'll segue into the United Kingdom. The segue being after German politicians warning against, you know, new fascist administration in the United States, or like thinking to lecture Americans. I hope Americans vote pro-democracy or something corny like that. They were suddenly quite mealy-mouthed, and even Chancellor Scholz congratulated Donald Trump for his victory. So again, to be monitored. We've got a administration that is on very shaky foundations, that doesn't have its own majority. And as I said, weird constellation where they fear one administration that probably is going to be kinder on them. If they, you know, that's going to be kind on them than the last administration, as long as they do not encroach on American companies and free speech. So to be seen.
Yeah. Now, so speaking of democracy, I don't know if you've seen this. It's about 30 seconds. I'll just play like 30 seconds of it. Hold on. Let me get to the right one.
If the Democrats fail, it might be the end of American bureaucracy.
Our bureaucracy really is in fundamental peril.
The foundations of American bureaucracy under attack.
They want to destroy our bureaucracy.
We are a bureaucracy in danger.
We're watching an election where people are on the ballot openly advocating the end of bureaucracy.
That's what Republicans are doing, attacking bureaucracy.
Yeah, this hits the head on the nail. Whenever they said bureaucracy, they meant their own deep state. And I mean, I'm intrigued to see if, I think Vivek Ramaswamy is actually the only candidate talked about actual numbers, like saying, okay, we need to get from 2.8 million federal employees to something like maybe 200,000. I think some number to that extent. So it'll be interesting. I mean, as we'd seen in the last election, the deep state you know, it's not to be underestimated and bureaucrats. Sure.
Well, they're stealing elections. Carrie Lake was announced to lose today. So, yeah. You know, which is insane that she got hundreds of thousands of votes less than, you know, Donald Trump, when everybody obviously voted for both of them. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, it is fascinating. And yeah, sometimes there's humor hits the hammer on the nail.
Yes.
And probably interesting enough, you know, segueing. I mean, we talked about, you know, some people being brainwashed in Germany, certainly in the United States, about this being a doomsday scenario. Now, I do live in the United Kingdom, and we have our fair share of American expats here. And it's sometimes really interesting in a pub or in a cafe to overhear conversations where you had sort of the, one British, one American lady sitting at the table next to me in a pub, and one of them almost consoling the other one, "Oh, I'm so sorry, what happened?" And she's like, "Yeah, it's very worrisome what's going to happen." And I mean, part of me says, should I get involved, like asking, well, what exactly, you know, the free speech part, or, you know, restoring?
I feel your pain. I sometimes I can't help it and just get involved, but
yeah, but yeah, so it's quite often I choose not to. It's sort of like you just want to be in peace, but yeah. So Britain, interesting enough, remember the last election, and so far, interesting enough, we haven't heard Russia did it, whereas the last election, that was kind of clear that Donald Trump only won because of Russian interference and Russian bot. Now, interesting enough, we had the United Kingdom's government party, the Labour Party, essentially sending 100 election advisors your way. Nobody talks much about it. You know, it was election interference when Putin did it. But now that the United Kingdom did it, that was no problem. But, well, the mealy-mouthed reaction then by the United Kingdom's leader, the current leadership, which just has recently gotten into power, Keir Starmer, as foreign minister, was very mealy-mouthed. Suddenly they were like, oh, we congratulate Donald Trump and all, after their sort of version of election interference didn't quite pan out in the way they thought about it, so that they hoped it was going to end. So that was certainly interesting. In the meantime, obviously, tons of other things are happening in the United Kingdom. It will be very, very interesting how the presence of Donald Trump, that might have just tipped the German coalition over the edge, might work out for the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom right now is in deep trouble. So Keir Starmer, who was always known to be sort of a globalist, was thought to be a pragmatic globalist, a centrist globalist, kind of like Tony Blair, but very quickly it became apparent, well, he's not quite as much of a smooth talker and Machiavellian genius as Tony Blair. So we discussed last time how he seemed to be making mistake after mistake, which are just horrible from an electoral standpoint. So trying to save money by, you know, still funding Ukraine big time, but taking money away from British pensioners from their so-called fuel allowance in the winter. You know, British houses quite often are rather old, not very well insulated. Fuel prices have gone up a couple of times since COVID, but also since the pivot of the admittedly quote-unquote conservative government to green policies. But his administration seemed to be making mistake after mistake, which also directly and unforced mistakes. That in one interesting case, curious footnote, affects US foreign policy directly. So I think some listeners amongst you will have heard of few listeners will have heard of the island groups of the Chagos Islands. Mm-hmm. This island group of the Chagos Islands, which the United Kingdom handed over, quote unquote, back to Mauritius, even though it never belonged to Mauritius, but Mauritius, that small island in the Indian Ocean, about 1,000 miles to the east of Africa. They actually never owned these islands, but it said, well, we are the closest and we are an African nation. So we should be controlling these islands. Now, on this island is the big strategic base, that is under British control, but mainly manned by Americans, called Diego Garcia. So actually, absolutely crucial, because if you... It's a sort of a natural aircraft carrier. If you control Diego Garcia, you can do a lot of things in the Indian Ocean. I mean, interesting enough, the other assets that you guys had in that part of the world was Bagram Air Base, but you kind of gave that up rather quickly. But yes, you still have Diego Garcia, but the Brits handed Diego Garcia, quote unquote, back to Mauritius. So it's going to be interesting. And Mauritius has been getting rather close to China over the last couple of years. So an interesting UK government that seems to, that just is perceived as every rightfully perceived as weak. And to continue the weakness and kowtowing to other countries was Britain has a foreign minister by the name of David Lemmy, who I think who's of Caribbean origin, and had also been tooting the horn of Donald Trump being a fascist and Donald Trump being very dangerous, who also then congratulated him sanctimoniously and very mealy mouthed, oh, congratulations, President Trump. Now, he had been calling for, well, that might sound familiar to the Californians amongst the Americans, for reparations. Yeah. You heard right. So essentially, Brits who have never owned slaves should pay reparations to Caribbean islands for people who have never been slaves either. And it also shows how poor the current quality of administration is that is in place in Europe, certainly. Where had they bothered to look into the history books, it was actually Britain that's one of the very first nations on this planet to actually abolish slavery, to spend an inordinate amount of blood and treasure. So there was a British Navy formation called the East India Squadron that actually stopped slave ships, sometimes even American slave ships, freed the slaves and such. So Britain spent an inordinate amount of blood and treasure. But now David Lemmy, a foreign minister of Caribbean origin, wants reparations for that. And just kind of like in the American case, like, well, how does that even look like, you know, having people who've never owned slaves paying reparations to people who never were slaves?
You mentioned that they were making, that Keir Starmer was making mistakes. Do you think it's mistakes or just blind ideology or following orders that he's, I mean, it seems more like just we
I
have
would
to
say
push
your
crazy ideology, but go ahead.
I would actually say it is crazy ideology. He is an ideologist. He is making tactical mistakes in the sense of he believes that stuff. Mm. But unlike Tony Blair, he makes a lot of unnecessary mistakes in the sense of that he enters the discussion on things like the reparation debates, on handing the Chagos Islands back. So he would have a lot bigger fish to fry to trip people over. But instead, time after time after time, probably a Tony Blair would have said, pick your battles. And the moment that you hand over a group of islands, you will no doubt embolden Argentina to say, hey, what about these Falkland Islands? Shouldn't we have shared responsibility? And I mean, that is an interesting bit. Whenever you've got governments that are perceived as weak, sort of the leftist narrative would be, well, we always need to be talking. Talking is the way to go. Whereas if they did that in the 1970s, and the Argentinian government very much perceived that as an unwillingness to defend the islands. And interesting enough, even the Thatcher island, the Thatcher government thought about, well, you know, these islands are expensive and let's withdraw the patrol ship that's there. So it's interesting.
Well, I don't think the UK could defend the Falklands today.
They could not. Because they have an aircraft carrier, the biggest aircraft carrier the Brits have ever fielded, but so far they don't have any aircraft to go on it. So I think a scheme where they thought about, you know, allowing the American Navy or maybe the Marine Corps, is it the F-22?
Yeah.
To fly on those. So it is interesting. So we've got a UK government that on the one hand is composed of hardcore ideologists, but again, due to, well, essentially the same diversity hiring doctrine that led the Democrats to Kamala Harris, they no longer have the quality of Machiavellian specialists such as Tony Blair, such as Peter Mandelson, such as Jack Straw, who can pull that off. And I mean, there are other cases like that. As I said last time, Keir Starmer, after the riots in Southport, after the three girls died, and I think five more were stabbed. He sent tirades in the direction of everybody who perceived to be far right, and rather than empathizing with what happened without, you know, ever approving of riots, riots are always wrong, obviously. But that was a big tactical mistake, just like full on not listening to that segment of the electorate and just berating them. And, you know, people have gone to prison, as I said last time, a 61-year-old grandfather who just happened to be present at the riots, or a 12-year-old was the got off on bail. But, I mean, there are other interesting things that have happened under Labour and that accelerated. And I'll give you another interesting example of the excesses of clamping down on free speech in Britain. So there's a British entrepreneur by the name of, female entrepreneur by the name of Bernie Spofforth. And she got arrested after tweeting after the Southport killing of the girls. Yet it is something along the lines, it is yet another time that somebody with mental health problem, because, you know, remember these days, it's never terrorism. It's always a mental health related incident. She's like, yet another incident of mental of the government failing us to protect us from mental health incidents. If they knew about this, there's hell to pay. And obviously that woman was then arrested. And she only reposted that on LinkedIn, and she was arrested and, by my understanding, sat in a jail cell without seeing her lawyer for at least 36 hours and has now been acquitted. But you know, even the caveat, if true, then there's hell to pay, didn't really save that woman. So we are seeing a really interesting situation with the United Kingdom. I mean, the United Kingdom was always its own beast, not quite part of Europe yet, and always probably the freest part of Europe. I mean, you know, there are documents going back to the 12th century where political actors say, I'm an Englishman, therefore I'm free. And to the part of Europe where, you know, you see the right-wing populism springing up all over Europe and gaining ground, and gradually the woke being put away. And whereas you see that in Britain gaining a foothold. And
that's the battle to come, is to recover the UK. I don't know if it's recoverable, but is the main battle, along with the United States.
That really is the main battle. I mean, the interesting thing about, so the UK and Ireland, I mean, probably the UK and Ireland were both the countries that most opened up to globalization. I mean, Ireland big time in record time. And certainly, you know, with it's really a warning for an American audience. I mean, sort of once, I mean, Maggie Thatcher did plenty of things right. She walked the country back from the abyss when everybody else just wanted to manage decline. You know, the labor unions ran the country in the United Kingdom at that time, and everybody said, well, and I think the great American historian Victor Davis Hanson said, look, everybody said, and this is just the way it is. They run things. And things are never quite the way they are. You know, if there's a political will, and she took on the labor unions, won, made the UK governable again. At the same time, obviously, she opened up in a very neoliberal fashion, essentially sold the UK family silver. And for instance, not a single of the UK car companies are controlled by British holders anymore. I mean,
hey, Christian, I've got to run to another show. I apologize. Yeah. But
not to worry. So I think we conclude the UK is the country to watch in Europe. Yeah. It is the most interesting bit, and we'll see how Germany works out with the Trump administration. And
so exciting times, my friend. So I'm looking forward to Eurobytes making a big difference in the discussion in Europe and in the United States in 2020.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, have a good Sunday, and we'll still be raising another glass to the U.S. elections.
Thank you, my friend. Take care. We have to do this in person. We have to raise that glass in person soon.
Soon, absolutely. Okay, take care.